to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
And welcome back, everybody, to the second hour of the Political Cesspool radio program, broadcasting to you from Memphis, Tennessee. And it's a lovely night, and I, for one, am just full of the Christmas spirit. I love Christmas. I love the decorations. I love the church service. I love the singing of carols. It's just a really, for me, a joyous time. And thank goodness more and more stores and more public places are beginning to call it Christmas again instead of just the winter wonderland or the winter holidays. So we're glad to see Christmas making a comeback, and it is making a comeback in many different places. So at least that's a bit of good news in what otherwise is in a very dark time in this country and in this world. A number of things I wanted to talk about. First, once again, I'd like to thank Keith Alexander for the first hour. Absolutely great discussion in the first hour of the show, and if you missed it, you really missed a good hour. But I want to talk about a number of issues. As Keith was talking about, the Republican presidential hopefuls who are milling about and are, as I said, like the targets in an arcade shooting gallery. As soon as one pops up, the media shoots them down. But it was a pretty poor crop, with the exception, in my opinion, of Ron Paul. And in my opinion, all of these erstwhile candidates are in fact nothing but baggage being thrown into the media spotlight to prevent Ron Paul from taking center stage. So Newt Gingrich's time is Newt the Grinch. His time will come to an end as well. He clearly is a candidate whose sole support lies in the media. I don't know where the media is coming up with these so-called polls or statistics on the candidates, but what I find interesting is less and less often the media is naming the poll, which poll it is, whether it's a Gallup poll or a news poll of some kind. They just say the polls currently show Newt Gingrich in the lead. Well, as someone who has conducted polls and someone who has gathered statistics, I can tell you that statistics can be manipulated in many, many ways. And don't believe that for a minute that Newt Gingrich has any measure of popularity beyond what the media wants to give him in terms of publicity, because he certainly does not have a large core support group. In fact, a recent poll shows that upwards of 72% of all Republicans have not made up their mind on a candidate yet. So 28% of the Republicans out there are the ones who are manipulating and affecting these polls, if they're legitimate polls to begin with. But in any case, Newt Gingrich is certainly, I wouldn't vote for him. I'd never vote for Newt Gingrich because he's a two-faced liar. He has consistently posed as a conservative while voting repeatedly for liberal programs when he was in Congress. He's a carpetbagger by Southern standards because he came from up north, came south, got a big fat job at two universities in Georgia, and then cobbles out a political career for himself. He's not to be trusted. He is supported by big government, big business. All of the lobbyists love him because he can be bought. And Newt Gingrich is certainly no choice I would make for president. I don't think most of the American people want him either. But he's the flavor of the day, so he's getting the spotlight. But believe me, Newt Gingrich will dig his own grave. He'll dig his own grave in the media. And I predict that Ron Paul is going to win some of these caucuses. He's going to win some of these states in the primaries, and it's going to change the complexion of this race. And I just pray that he doesn't fall victim to a conspiracy of some sort or even assassination. I wouldn't put anything by the current status quo power group in this country. The political establishment, I think, is murderous. I think the political establishment is dishonest. I think the political establishment is totally depraved. And so it doesn't matter whether Republicans or Democrats. We're dealing with a system that has abandoned the core constituency of this country, which is the white population. Turned against them. We don't count anymore in statistics. We don't count anymore in politics. We're just being shunted aside, and open arms are being spread for illegal immigrants and non-whites and deviants of all kinds. And so what's going to result is a deviant, disorganized third world country. That's where we're headed. People are not waking up to the truth. You know, the white race in this country is on a death ride. It's on a death ride in Europe. There seems to be no end to the measures of self-destructiveness which white people are capable of. And, you know, when we're talking about white people, I'm talking about my family and my children and your family and your children. And think about that in terms of what's coming in the future if the current political establishment maintains its power. And I think it's a very grim future indeed. But, you know, to give an example of this, I want to talk a little bit about a Kentucky church in Pike County, Kentucky, which is 98% white, which is close to West Virginia. And this little church, after one of the members of the church, a woman, a young woman who had been away to college, showed up in the church with her boyfriend from Zimbabwe. And there's a big stink because this little church, little Golden Air Free Will Baptist Church in Pike County, Kentucky, voted to not allow interracial couples to become members of the church. And, you know, the media firestorm around this little church just proves how weak and how vulnerable multiculturalism and cultural Marxism really is. Because do they really need to make such a big national uproar over a little Baptist church in Pike County, Kentucky, because the members voted to not allow interracial couples into the congregation? Why is that such a threat to the big almighty multicultural empire in which we live? Is that really such a threat to you? Think about it. Anyway, this little church, we'll go into this a little bit more after the break, but they voted 9-6 among the leadership of the church to not allow interracial couples into the congregation. I think it was a very, very brave move to take. I think it's scripturally correct, and certainly there's more to this story than the hurt feelings of a little white trash girl in Pike County, Kentucky, who, you know, brings back an African boyfriend. But we're going to talk more about this in the next segment. And, oh, don't forget, in the third hour of the show, Sam Dixon. And he's coming on to talk about none other than the Republican, currently the Republican leader in the polls for the nomination, Newt Gingrich. And this is a firsthand account of Newt Gingrich, not something that you can find on the internet, because Sam Dixon had direct contact with Newt Gingrich, and he can tell us quite a bit about the man who currently wants to be the Republican nominee. So, we'll be right back after these messages, the Political Cesspool. I'm Bill Rowland, sitting in for James Edwards. We'll be right back.
Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back again, everybody. Bill Rowland here, sitting in for James Edwards. I'm his tail gunner tonight, while James took a little short vacation with his lovely family. And we certainly hope and pray that everything is going well with him and that he makes it back safely to Memphis After his trip. And once again, I just want to wish everybody out there Merry Christmas. I think we ought to be saying it more often and establishing it once again as the real holiday of December and not some winter festival holiday. I don't know what the pagans do on Christmas, but certainly I don't think they have as much fun as Christians, nor do they really celebrate in a spiritual way. But in any case, you know, that's another topic. You know, we've been discussing paganism on this show and the spread of paganism and the spread of heresy in the church and apostasy. It's a very ugly picture, very sad, I think, condition of the Christian church in America today. And in fact, in Europe as well, that the church no longer stands for anything. It falls for everything. It has become a cultural Marxist sanctuary instead of a sanctuary for Christians who want to worship the true and living God, Jesus Christ. Very few Christian ministers nowadays are willing to take a real stand for Christ and a real stand for Christianity. Which brings us back to the story I was discussing before the break. A small Kentucky church in Pike County, Kentucky, which is near West Virginia, voted to ban anyone involved in interracial marriage from the congregation and issued a statement that it does not condone interracial marriage. And the story is that this girl from Pike County, who belonged to Golden Arrow Free Will Baptist Church, which voted to ban interracial couples from the congregation, came back from college, and she had with her a boyfriend from Zimbabwe. So, you know, anyway, she has gone and gone over to adultery and brought back this this African as her so-called fiancé. I can only imagine what they have in common, but I can tell you that it's based on lust and sex and not on love and real compatibility. But oddly enough, this girl whose name is Harville, her father actually approves of Ticha Chikuni from Zimbabwe as her fiancé, and he thinks that Chikuni is just nice, and he thinks he is just like a son. Well, that shows you the kind of shallow mentality that's involved here, that any white man living in Kentucky who immediately embraces this alien, this black, alien as remotely removed as Pikeville, Kentucky, or Pike County as you can get, and embraces him already as a son. This is a man of a real shallow intellect and very shallow values. But nonetheless, he's created a huge stink around the church. Dean Harville, Stella's father, has stirred up even more trouble for the church and says this is just the devil's work. Well, he's doing the devil's work by allowing his daughter or encouraging his daughter to run off with some third world savage, basically. He's only dooming his family to oblivion. And if that's what he intends to do, well, then he's succeeded. But clearly he was scared to death of being called a racist, just like everybody else in America, even in a little all-white community. He's running for cover. So he's not going to be called a racist, even as his daughter is led away to the third world by this African. But that's not important to him. What is important to him is that the church be brought under the full weight and fire of the media. And as I was saying previously, isn't it odd that this little tiny church in this little tiny town, in the middle of what most media big shots would call the boondocks or Hickville, that what this church does is so profound and important that it requires the national media to bring it under control again? That only exemplifies the weakness and the vulnerability of the multicultural empire in which we live. They are so frightened of any dissent that they crush out even the dissent of a few members of a little Baptist church in Kentucky. That's how desperate and scared they are. They can't allow any dissent at all, even in a little church. Well, that means that the more we do, the more dissent that we bring before the powers that are currently oppressing us as a race, the more they will fear us. And they have to fear us before we can bring about any change. Without fear, they will not react, because it's fear is the only thing they understand, because they, like this Zimbabwean from Africa, are wild savages. And the only thing they understand is fear. Anyway, we've got, someone on the line from Birmingham. I didn't get the name exactly. Welcome to the Political Cesspool.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Who
am I talking to?
My name is Jeb Stuart Leslie.
Okay, Jeb, what you got?
I'm tuned into the second hour of the program, and I heard you commenting about Ron Paul. And I don't know if this was covered in the first hour, but you know he was excluded from the Republican Jewish Coalition's forum, and I find that interesting because I've read a quote that Abe Foxman, the leader of the ADL, quoted on November 12th to the Al Jaminer, I think that's a magazine. He says, when it comes to position on Israel, with the exception of Ron Paul, there is not much difference between the parties. And there's nothing truer could have been said, you know, and it goes back to my favorite one of my favorites, George Wallace, said there's not a dime's worth of difference between them, and it's proven truer every day. On to the topic that you were talking about, this Golnair Free Will Baptist Church, you see, the reason they have to crush such dissent like this is because political correctness is a religion. And it's no different there in the Middle Ages when the Catholic Church would, you know, hang you or burn you at the stake for saying anything that went against their religion. Is because they don't have facts and they don't have true faith or beliefs to back up what they're saying. They only they have to resort to intimidation and scare tactics. And as far as Golnair Free Will Baptist Church, all I can say about them is hallelujah and praise God. Stand firm.
Exactly. Well, you know, I refer to liberalism, multiculturalism, cultural Marxism. It's all their beliefs. Some people call them religion. I call them a superstition, because they react as if their superstitions had been touched, rather than religion. I mean, people can discuss religion in a fairly reasonable way, usually. I mean, there's some heated discussion, but it's just, you know, you can discuss religion. These people won't discuss religion. They're superstitious about their beliefs, and that if you violate some taboo, the world is going to come crashing down around them. It's more of a mumbo jumbo voodoo type belief, in my opinion.
Scared of people stepping on cracks because their mama's back might get broke or something.
Right, exactly. I think that's really the core emotion behind their belief system, is that if you touch it, or if you violate some little taboo, it's going to all come crashing down, which I think is true. I think the more we violate their taboos, the more we step on their cracks, the more we break their mother's backs, the more they will have to come to a sense of desperation and fear. You know, the one thing I've learned about liberals over the years, and I've had a lot of clashes with them on college campuses, in public, everywhere, is that they are afraid. They're very afraid of losing what they've got. And we have to constantly increase their fears. And that's the only thing that's going to allow us to defeat them. As long as we're afraid of them, they're always going to have the upper hand. Once they're afraid of us, we can trample them flat.
Well, yeah, liberalism is emotional diarrhea.
Hey, Jeb, we got a break coming up. We'll be with you right back after these messages.
Yes, sir.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the Political Cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
And welcome back, everybody. Bill Rowland here, sitting in for James Edwards. And we've been having a great discussion tonight on a variety of issues. In the second hour, I am covering the Kentucky church that banned interracial marriage from its congregation. And I have on the line with me Jeb from Alabama. And Jeb, as you were saying, I think your last comment was hallelujah and praise God for the Golnair Baptist, Free Will Baptist Church. You know, the one thing I would say is, in you know, just as a cautionary note, the Free Will Baptists are Arminian, and for those who know about Christianity, they're Arminian, which is in some congregations and some denominations considered heresy, but also they're much more liberal than the Southern Baptists. So this little church may have put itself in peril just because of belonging to the Free Will Baptist denomination. But anyway, Jeb, getting back to the church and what's happening there, you know, I have I know someone here from Memphis who's a Methodist and attended a and was a member of a Methodist church here that was all white. And you know, I sort of took him to task for belonging to a United Methodist Church. You know, they're so liberal and so, you know, against everything normal usually in the Christian religion. But you know, he told me it was interesting. He says, "No, this is a very conservative church." He said, "They've already experimented with multiculturalism. They already experimented with integration, integrating the congregation, and it failed." And he said, "Fortunately, they learned their lesson. They were smart enough and sane enough not to repeat the same mistake." So, you know, it remains to be seen what will happen with this little church. I would imagine if enough pressure is brought onto them, they'll reverse the policy, but we'll just have to wait and see. But Jeb, your thoughts on that?
Well, it's indicative of how much of a closed society that we do live in, how the establishment will come down on a I mean, this is a 40 congregation church in in the corner of Kentucky, right there in Pike County. There's really not that much influence that they could exert nationally, but this program so-called problem is national attention simply because they have to show that they are crushing dissenters, and that is not for the benefit of these particular individuals or young Miss Stella Harville or Tai Chini Chikumu or whatever his name. It's not for their benefit. It is for the establishment's benefit to tell me and you not to step out of line or we'll face the same consequences. And what it boils down to is it's emotional diarrhea coupled with intellectual constipation, and these people just can't think. And I'm glad for it. Like you said, I'm with you. Resist it at every turn. Point out the hypocrisy and fight them with ridicule, because that's what they deserve. They don't deserve respect. They don't deserve an honest debate. They deserve to be pointed at and mocked incessantly.
Well, I can tell you for a fact that the biggest Baptist church in this city is suffering from a loss of members due to its turn to the left, its embrace of some of these cultural Marxist ideals, and the members are dropping out. You know, they may say hallelujah through a couple of sermons about this stuff, but they begin the congregation, and again, at one time it was virtually an all-white congregation, a very conservative church leadership. And what happens is eventually white people in these churches begin to feel threatened by these diversities and by non-whites because they don't worship the same. They don't behave the same. They are usually aggressive either towards females in the congregation or about changing certain policies. And so whites begin to feel uncomfortable and they leave. And the result is, of course, there are more smaller churches coming into existence. Maybe they can't support a pastor, but they can at least bring together a congregation. And the big churches are dying off, can't pay the mortgage on those big sanctuaries. So, you know, there's a positive direction in terms of Christianity of people abandoning these heretical and false churches that are embracing false doctrines and moving back towards the worship of Jesus Christ, which is what we should be doing, and not necessarily listening to a frustrated actor who has now become a pastor. You know, I've had some pretty close studies of pastors over the years, and many of them are genuinely just small stage frustrated actors who get to perform once a week. Many are dedicated, and many are genuine, and I think the pastor of my church certainly is. But this is the problem with Christianity. You know, we keep coming back to the problems. Problem in Christianity is not that Christianity, there's not anything wrong with Christianity. The problem is that people have gotten into churches who are trying to change Christianity into something it's not. So it's the heretical version of Christianity that's a problem, not genuine Christianity. And I believe we have a very special guest on the line. James, is that you?
Bill, it is me. You know, I'm like a worried parent. Anytime I'm out of town or at a speaking engagement, I pace the floor if I can't be on the program. You know, I've always got to make sure everything's okay. And, of course, in under the guidance of your able intellect, Bill, it always is. But I called in to our network just before the show to catch up our owner on a couple of other matters, and he reminded me that even though I'm here without an internet connection, spending a little bit of time with the family tonight, a little quick weekend vacation, that I could call in over the phone and listen to the show on the Liberty News Wire, provided by Audio Now, which is a great service for people who, if you're ever like me, you can't get a radio reception, you can't sign on the internet, you can listen over the phone. And I'll remind people how to do that when I get back to Memphis and update the website again. But anyway, long story short, I've been able to listen to the majority of the show tonight. And, of course, I've enjoyed it. And what can you say about Jeb Stuart there in Alabama who called in? You know, just a perfect representation of the caliber of our listening audience. But, Bill, I had to call in to chime in on the discussion y'all are having right now and have been having for this hour. And, you know, obviously because of a lot of the apostasy that's manifesting itself in the churches these days, a lot of good people are turning their backs on the faith of our fathers, which is, of course, Christianity. And I know you lament, Bill, the same way that I lament the fact that a lot of our folks are returning or apparently beginning to re-embrace some sort of paganism or neo-paganism. And we saw here, you know, we just did a story on the Cesspool blog about Merry Christmas versus Happy Holidays, and there was another story that we posted right after that that talked about how at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, you know, they have that beautiful chapel there. And now they have complemented the chapel with some sort of a reinterpretation of Stonehenge for the witches. And this is not an exaggeration for the witches and the druids that joined the Air Force. You know, they certainly, their, you know, worship of the earth is equal to or greater than the worship of Jesus Christ, and now the Air Force has that. And since we're on this subject, since you've been on this subject, Bill, I'd like for you, because I know you're loaded for bear with that, and it's something that me and you talk about quite a bit off the air, before Sam Dixon, one of our greatest guests, joins us in the third hour. I wanted to see if you could, talk to the audience about that story and paganism in general and what it means for our people and what it meant for our people back when the people of what would become Europe were practicing it.
Well, certainly, James. I think that historically it's quite clear that Christianity created Europe. And I say that because even though on some websites and some people who are pro-white or white nationalists say that paganism was the real religion of our fathers, actually the version of paganism that we have today was recorded during the Christian era, and it was based largely on folk tales and old legends. And we actually don't know what the religion of the pagans was or how they worshiped. We only know what we know about the pagans from the Christians who wrote down their history, because the pagans couldn't write. They didn't have a written, they didn't have an alphabet or writing of any significant kind. There were runes, but we don't know what those were. Literacy also was a gift of Christianity to Europe. So, this idea that somehow Christianity was against white people defies 2,000 years of history, when in fact, without Christianity, probably Europe as we know it now would have been overrun by a multitude of different races and different cultures, because it was the unifying effect of Christianity that defied the Mongols and the Muslims and a host of other invaders. We've got a break coming up. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool Guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Well, audience, we have an unusual situation tonight because I'm Bill Rowland. I'm hosting the political cesspool because James Edwards was supposed to be on vacation, but we have James Edwards on the line. So it's James Edwards in the political cesspool once again. James, coming back on, we were talking about paganism and versus Christianity and the effect that paganism is having on white people really all over the world. And I'm going to make an exception in just a second. But clearly, this is a historical anomaly to claim that somehow white people lost out when pagans gave up their superstitions in favor of the one true God and the one true religion, and that is of Jesus Christ. Somehow there is they've concocted this belief that Europe suffered as a consequence, and I say there would have been no Europe without Christianity.
Yeah, you know, Bill, you can't separate who we are as a race and as a people from the faith that guided us through all these years. I mean, even the great Vikings eventually bowed a knee to Christ. And, you know, this is a political talk show. But at the same time, we're Christians. And so from time to time, you know, the two are absolutely going to intersect, and you're going to get some of that. But and rightly so, because, you know, it's kind of like the chicken and the egg. You know, what came first? You know, were we successful because of who we are or because of the faith that guided us? And, you know, I don't think one could have gone without the other. And Europe certainly experienced its greatest stride as Christian nations, and certainly America and its founding and all that has been accomplished here since, you know, the 1700s, 1600s has been done. And you see the unfurling of Europe and the unraveling of America, and it's beginning to happen and has been happening now for the last few decades as we begin to distance ourselves from the faith that fostered these great nations. So, anyway, Bill, you know, I never listen to the show unless you're hosting it. I never listen to an archive. I'm one of those guys that cringes at my own voice. You could have certainly and have certainly been doing a great job tonight, but I wanted to call in since I was listening to the second hour over the phone, and I wanted to make sure that you touched on this before we welcome Sam, because I know you're going to get back into contemporary politics with him, Newt Gingrich, and other matters when Sam comes on. But I knew you were very passionate about this issue, so I wanted to call in and ask you to continue to provide the commentary there. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to turn it back over to Bill. I'm going to go back and enjoy the rest of my vacation. I'll be back in Memphis on Monday and, of course, back on the air with you next week. And until then, enjoy the rest of the show. It's been more than capable hands. Bill, we love you, bud.
And we love you, James. And say hello to your family for me and enjoy yourself. And once again, thanks for calling in, and as you can see, everything's safe and sound here. But getting back to
it
this,
is, my friend, and you take care, and I'm going to go. I'm going to really start my vacation.
Okay, James, we'll talk to you soon. getting back to this issue of paganism in Europe, and I would like, you know, to challenge the pagans and the Odinists and the Druids out there that before Christianity. And Europe was entirely tribal, with the exception of the various empires, Rome and Greece and so forth, the Carthage to some degree, were entirely tribal. And nothing united these tribes during the whole time, the period of the Roman Empire. These tribes fought amongst each other, and different kingdoms fought amongst each other. They had nothing binding them together, neither religion, nor common language, nor tribal belief, nor tradition. And so they fought each other relentlessly over the centuries, even under Roman rule. Romans, in fact, were very much more secure that these people were fighting each other rather than fighting the Romans. And as to the Romans' religion unifying their empire, one of the very, very important aspects of the Roman Empire, which had been going on since the fall of the Republic, was the freedom of religion in Rome. Rome was very much a polytheistic culture. There was no really one religion in Rome, and the household gods that the Romans maintained were really more about tradition and family and ancestor worship than worship than the worship of a higher god. They did not hold their gods, Zeus and Jupiter and the Greek gods they had adopted, in very high esteem, because they had adopted foreign gods. Jupiter and Hera and all the Roman gods were based on Greek gods. So this wasn't the native religion of Rome. It was the religion of Greece. So and once again, they didn't hold any particularly high regard. It was all a matter of formality. It was all a matter of ceremony for the Romans. But Rome was a very, very polytheistic society, where by the first century you could find converts to Judaism, you could find a few converts to Christianity, converts to Zoroastrianism, Manichaeanism. So there were many religions in Rome. And to say that somehow Christianity overthrew this great, you know, deeply felt Roman religion is simply false. It didn't happen that way. In fact, Christianity extended the Roman Empire and preserved the Roman Empire much longer than it would have survived otherwise without Christianity. What Constantine did was bring a unifying religion to the Roman Empire. And that unifying religion continued the Roman Empire in the form of the Holy Roman Empire and in the form of the Eastern Roman Empire. So, this idea that Christianity was somehow a detriment to these empires is also not true. The Greeks quickly embraced Christianity, the most civilized people in the entire Mediterranean, and probably in the entire world at that time, became early Christians. They were among the first Christians. And virtually one tribe after another, one kingdom after another in Europe, became Christian, not by the sword, as has been falsely stated by some pagans and some druids and some of these other groups, but in fact, by persuasion, not by the persuasion necessarily of the populace as a whole, but by the kings. Kings in power with armies, kings with the power to simply burn these Christian missionaries at the stake, heard the word of God and were converted on their own, by their own faith. I mean, there's no other way to put it. They weren't held to the sword. You know, as James said, even the Vikings eventually bent their knee to Jesus Christ. We have to recognize Christianity, true Christianity, as the true creator of Europe, of Christendom, which is what Europe was called for centuries. And keep in mind, too, you pagans who are going back to these old myths, legends, and superstitions, we have been Christian as a people far longer, in all likelihood, than Europe was ever pagan, whatever that means. That is, Christianity has been the religion of Europe, virtually all of Europe, for at least 1,400 years. No one knows how long Odin was a god or any of the other pagan deities. They were all recorded again by Christians. They wouldn't even exist today if Christians hadn't bothered to write about them. So, you know, don't chase a false religion and say that that's going to be the salvation of the white Christian nations. That's wrong. It's the re-embrace of Christianity and the reestablishment of true Christian institutions which will save Europe, not destroy it. An interesting point here. I've been reading a history of England, the Oxford English History of England, and what's interesting to note is that at the height of the British Empire is the same time, which was in the 1890s, when the British Empire really reached its full strength and its greatest wealth. During this time is when the congregations and churches began to dwindle. Fewer and fewer people attended church. And so the result was a loss of something in the English and the British soul. These are the people who call themselves the empire race. They believed that they could conquer the whole world. And yet because they lost their faith, their empire began to decline into the 20th century. Then came World War I. Then came World War II. And look at Britain now. Is Britain the way it is now because they're more Christian than they were in 1895? No. It's because declining attendance to church, declining faith, declining belief in the true, untrue, and living God led Britain to where it is today, a multicultural cesspool, a multicultural septic tank of different races, different religions, squawking Tower of Babel. Britain is on its deathbed because it abandoned the faith of its fathers. For centuries, Britain was one of the absolute bastions of Christianity in Europe. And now it's little more than a shadow of its former self. Where is nationalism the strongest? Where is race consciousness the strongest? In Russia, where the Orthodox religion has made a strong, powerful, and dynamic comeback. And that is who we need to be representative of white consciousness. Not Odinists, not pagans, Orthodox Christians in Russia. They're bringing their country back from the brink through their religion, not despite it. This is The Political Cesspool, back in the third hour with one of my favorite guests, the great Sam Dixon, and he'll be talking about what he knows about Newt Gingrich.